Darker Days of Dorothy Gale. Aftermath. For episode 67 and 68, chapters 61 and 62. The First Miracle and A Simple Formality. Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. Are you Mr. Cotter? Because I am welcoming you back. There's a growing number of people out there that won't get that joke, but that's okay. If you have the capability to listen to a podcast, you're almost certainly capable of using Google to figure out what the heck I'm talking about. Let's move on. The last aftermath was largely an angry rant about Dave Chappelle and his victim-blaming attitude. This week, a slightly less angry look at the world. Last week was a double episode week. Not because the two episodes were closely related to each other or for any special reason, other than the fact that one of them was super-duper short. I always feel silly when I release a weekly episode that's only 5 minutes long. There's almost no point in doing an aftermath for it. And that's why you got The First Miracle and A Simple Formality. This week is a bit grisly and a bit annoying, if I'm being honest with myself and honest with you. The First Miracle is the, well, it's the first of three. There was a reason I picked three miracles when I wrote this, but that was years ago, and I no longer remember what my reasoning was. Maybe I was trying to pad the story out even more. Maybe I felt I had written myself into a corner and needed some extra time to straighten things out. Maybe I wanted to explore the spirituality of the stranger as he attempts to reform his life in search of redemption. Maybe in the coming chapters, I will remember why I chose three miracles instead of just one. Who knows? Either way, we'll find out, or not, together, you and me. As the stranger and the lion continue their trek through the wasteland that is, or was, Oz, they come across a stack of dead bodies. It's not clear at the beginning who these people are, but it's made clear that the stranger knows who they are. He is overcome with sorrow and regret at the sight. The lion, however, remains uncaring and apathetic. On top of the stack is a man sprawled out on his stomach, his head twisted around so it's looking outward, with hollowed eye sockets. As the stranger weeps and apologizes, he is approached by Ifel. Outside of Gracia, Ifel is the last remaining sister of Ozma, which of course makes her incredibly powerful. Remember, when one sister dies, her power is dispersed equally among the remaining sisters. That's kind of the whole reason for Ozma wanting Dorothy to kill them all. Anyway, Ifel is the last one. Vel was killed by Cianfa in the desert, Devorin killed by Dorothy and the Woodman in Judeca. Gracia has been MIA for like, 186 years, if my math is correct on my timeline. But of course, Gracia is back now, but it's not entirely clear who all knows that. And she has no witchy powers, so really, what difference does it make if she's hanging around? So, for all intents and purposes, Ifel is the last of the sisters. Okay, here's the thing, before we move on. I've already told you, I don't remember a whole lot of things. I tend to write with a purpose, but sometimes specifics manage to get a little bit lost or forgotten. I'm pretty sure in an earlier aftermath, I explained the naming conventions for Ozma and her sisters. I probably still have it in like an earlier draft of the book, but I can't be bothered to go back and sift through old drafts at this very moment. So anyways, I'm pretty sure I've explained this before, but I'll do it again, and hopefully it lines up with my previous explanation, so I don't look like too much of a doofus. If memory serves correctly, and I'm like 80% sure it does, Grisha came from being free, I think. As in, she's like free of the responsibilities of being a witch or something. Or maybe it meant thankful, or a combination of the two. Anyways, let's move on to the next one here. Vel was named for her feminine wiles. A seductress, if you will. Wiles somehow translated to Vel. I can't remember how, but that's what it came from. So, you know, do with that knowledge what you will, I guess. Devorin was a
devourer of souls.
And, of course, there's Ifel, which I think was just evil. That sounds like something I would do, which I can admit seems kind of lazy. Like, you've got these characters with very specific meanings, and they were probably somewhat creative years ago when I wrote this. And then there's just this broadly painted evil. I mean, sure, it's evil. Evil is
evil.
But it sounds kind of lame when compared to feminine wiles or
devourer of souls.
I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Also, let's be clear. I hate fantasy names. I really, really do. It sometimes comes as a surprise to people when I tell them I'm not generally a fan of fantasy worlds and books. I don't like The Hobbit or Lord of the Rings. I only started watching Game of Thrones because it was a pop culture phenomenon, and I kind of wanted to see what the big deal was. And I liked Game of Thrones, but I had no real interest in it from the beginning. And I don't know if I would have watched it if my wife didn't like it. I have a super hard time with weirdly named characters and strange names of countries that cover sprawling maps. Anyways, I was going somewhere with this. I can't remember exactly where, but it was somewhere. No, it'll come back to me. Just let me look over my little script here. Okay, we're looking, scrolling up and looking. Oh, right. I don't like fantasy names. I think they're usually pretty dumb. And I can admit, my characters, no different than their dumb names. I'm not saying I'm not proud of what I've done here. I'm not saying their names are without value. I'm just saying that when I read them out loud or describe the naming conventions, I do feel a tad bit silly. Maybe even a little melodramatic. But that could just be because I'm a self-conscious fool. Anyway, there's a super obnoxious part here where Ifel has a conversation with the stranger. You know the part I'm talking about. Because it's the part where she's having a conversation with the stranger. There's only one conversation, so kind of have to know what part I'm talking about. Anyways, she asks his name, he gives a cryptic response, then she gives another cryptic response in return, and that's meant to sound deep and philosophical, but probably isn't. What's your name? I don't know. Where are you from? Nowhere. Ooh. No name and no past. How can you possibly exist? Some real Lost vibes going on here. And not in a good way, probably. In all seriousness, though, this chapter does actually have some depth to it. The stranger is looking for a savior, and Ifel proves that she might just be that. She brings Vernon Howell and his followers back to life. Vernon chokes up an eye and places it back in its socket, and it's implied here that the stranger consumed Howell's other eyeball. Part 3 of Darker Days of Dorothy Gale is going to be somewhat of a retread of the Inferno. I'm not going to get as in-depth as I did in Part 2, but there's still plenty of infernal influence to be found here. In these chapters involving the stranger after the cataclysm, he's got a bit of a Dante vibe going on. He's lost, he's confused, he's looking for some kind of meaning to his life, or life in general. This moment here, when he finds the pile of corpses, is somewhat akin to Dante being lost in the dark woods.
Midway upon the journey of my life, I found myself within a forest dark, for the straightforward pathway had been lost. How hard a thing it is to say. What was this forest? Savage, rough, and stern, which in the very thought renews the fear. So bitter is it. Death is little more but of the good to treat, which there I found. Speak, I will, of the other things I saw there.
So here we have the stranger, midway upon the journey of his life, finding himself within a dark forest. The path he was once on, the path he once thought to be straightforward, now far behind him and lost. The birds he and the lion were following have mostly disappeared, and it is becoming apparent that maybe they were never assigned to be followed in the first place. The forest, savage, rough, and stern. Oz is no longer the place he once knew. It is now a place to be feared. He weeps at the sight of Vernon Howell, weeps at the guilt he feels for what he's done. At this moment, he feels that death would be better than his current existence, but also maybe that death would be too forgiving or too easy to accept. It wouldn't provide him the redemption he seeks. The arrival of Ifel is akin to the arrival of Virgil, a guide, a potential savior, a sign that change is possible. See? I do put thought into my works every once in a while. And sometimes I do actually remember what I'm talking about. I don't know if all that thoughtful stuff is really clear in the book, or if it only becomes clear with these Aftermath episodes. I suppose maybe part of that is just up to the listener and how much thought they want to give the story in general. Moving on to Chapter 62, A Simple Formality. It's literally just a simple formality. That's it. There's not much to it. Dorothy, Mr. the Tin Woodman, Tip, Gracia, and presumably Pumpkin Jack, and of course the Tree Horse, are all officially introduced to each other right here, right now. There's really not much to say about it. It opens with Tip being somewhat of a lighthearted character. He's 186 years old, with all the spark and sass of a 185-year-old. We do get a little bit of cryptic messaging and foreshadowing here as well when Gracia introduces herself and mentions that they all have a common destination. The cathedral. Insert dramatic or possibly revelatory music here. Okay, not there, right here. Yeah, that was good. That was good. I like that. Very good. It's amazing the free music you can find on the internet. Anyways, that's pretty much it. It was only a few minutes long, offered no real character advancement, did little to push the plot forward, So I guess we're at the end of this one. If I missed something or failed to address something you feel I should have, go ahead and let me know. I'm always open to questions, comments, or, you guessed it, constructive criticism. You don't have to like the show. I'm not entirely sure why you're listening, though, if you don't. But like it or not, you can be nice. I know you can. I believe in you. If you'd like to get in touch with me, you can do that by emailing darkdaysofdorothygale@outlook.com. There's no more Twitter for this guy. Or X, I guess, if that's what you really want to call it. But you can find me on the old TikTok, while it's still around, where it's @DarkDorothyG. I put a clip of my angry Dave Chappelle rant on TikTok the other day, and I'm pretty sure it got me shadow banned on the platform. It was popular and getting views and comments for about 15 minutes before the views very abruptly stopped. And then the next post I made got less views than normal as well. I mean, I don't generally get a lot of clicks on that profile anyways, but it's pretty obvious that something's up when you go from barely 100 views for your most popular to zero. But the profile is still there, shadow banned or not. If you like the content, fight the algorithm. Do all the clicking and all the liking. Alternately, I appear on TikTok, Instagram, and that goofy Threads thing under the identity of The Ordinary Sun. That's S-U-N. The Instagram feed actually has a lot of fun Dark Days-themed artwork. And, of course, if social media isn't quite your jam, if you just burned out on it, there's always the official Dark Days website. That's ddofdg.com. You can also find links to t-shirts and stickers and stuff there as well. And if you were a fan of all that Dante stuff I did back in part two, I have compiled a list of all my favorite Dante's Inferno resources. It's got links and brief summaries and reviews of each place. So you can check that out on the website as well. Darker Days of Dorothy Gale used to be on Amazon as an e-book and in paperback form. But at the time of this recording, the podcast is the only way to experience it. If you would like to support the show, buying a t-shirt or a sticker or something really is the coolest way to go about it. If you'd like to support my specific brand of creativity in a more direct and financial way, you can find me at buymeacoffee.com/ordinarysun. Again, that's S-U-N. And I don't know why I read it like a robot, but I did. Anyways, if you support me on Buy Me a Coffee, I will send you a personal, handwritten thank you note, complete with an illustration. Seriously, I will write you a thank you note. I'll put it in an envelope. I'll stick a stamp on the envelope. I'll take it to the post office. They'll take it to another post office. Then eventually it will end up in a mailbox at whatever address you like. And on top of all that, I will give you a shout out on this pretty obscure podcast if you want me to. If you don't want me to, I won't. I'll respect your privacy. So, come back next time for chapter 63, The Story of a Man. Thanks for listening. I love you all.